Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The countdown is on to fight time. This is Big Fight Weekend. Now, here is your host, TJ Reeves.
Well, welcome in, everybody, as we get ready, dare I say this, to flip the calendar over. We have done that now as we head into the weekend and get ready for the month of April and the return of the former unified heavyweight champ, Anthony Joshua, plus an interesting ESPN top rank card. That and a lot more, some news of the week and much more. It is the Big Fight Weekend preview. I am merely the somewhat capable, somewhat frazzled host. I'm scrambling right now as we speak because I'm headed to Houston, Texas for the college basketball Final Four. In addition to the fights, we got the end of the college basketball season in the Lone Star State. So I'm double dipping this weekend, but we were not going to go into the weekend and not have a preview podcast. We're always here for you, peeps. And hello to our insider from his Fight Freaks Unite Substack and BigFightWeekend.com, Dan Rayfield. How are we feeling as we head into another weekend? Some intriguing stuff that's going to go on in the ring this weekend. How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to the fights. I'm excited because as we tape this, I got the New York Yankees season opener on. My man Aaron Judge with a home run in his first at bat. Garrett Cole pitching a beautiful game so far. Hope it holds up and we have
so
a great season.
If you hear Rayfield swear for no apparent reason in the background while I'm talking, that could be related to the Yankees doing something. But Aaron Judge already delivered in the bottom of the first. He got Rayfield money in the offseason. What did he get? $200 million, $300 million, $800 million?
That's Rayfield money. He got like $20, but it's all good. Yeah.
So in any event, we got Yankees. We got college basketball, the unexpected Final Four of San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Miami, and UConn. Now, UConn's the brand name. Will we get an all-beach Armageddon Final Four of Florida Atlantic and Miami? I don't know, but that'll be for Monday night. So I'm in Houston the whole weekend, but I will be taking part in the perusing of the fights, the recaps. We will have a Fight Freaks Unite recap off the weekend. Fear not, peeps. We're going to have that coming. Thank you for finding us, however you've done so, through a social media link, through Dan's Substack, subscribing on the Big Fight Weekend podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. For example, if you subscribe, you got the Anthony Joshua conversation that Dan had with him as its own standalone thing earlier in the week, and you needed no other prompt. Because Dan, when it shows up, for those that are following and subscribing, what do they get?
Oh, come on. You know, they get a ding, a bell, a light, a banner. I've heard a vibration.
Some kind of notification is going to tell you. In my case, it is a vibration. It is a banner that says brand new Big Fight Weekend. And you got to hear from Anthony Joshua, which we're going to get into that fight in a couple of moments. So make sure you follow and subscribe. Podcast audience continues to grow. We say thank you for that. And we got bigger fights this month of April. Canelo coming at the beginning of May and some other ones as well to talk about. So without further delay, let's go ahead and get into Anthony Joshua's ring return. Again, you did speak to him. It is American Jermaine Franklin as the opponent. On paper, Brother Rayfield, this appears to be a return bout that he should win and win probably easily. Give me thoughts as Joshua is back in England on Saturday.
I may be in the minority, but while I do think that Joshua should win this fight and will win this fight, I don't think it's necessarily an easy fight, and I don't understand why everybody thinks it's an easy fight. Joshua is coming off two losses. Yes, they were against a great fighter in Alexander Usyk, a future Hall of Famer, an Olympic gold medalist like Joshua was, a tremendously skilled fighter, undisputed as a cruiserweight, unified now as a heavyweight, could have been fighting for undisputed if Tyson Fury wouldn't have blown the deal. But he's taken on a good fighter in Jermaine Franklin, who was a top American amateur. He's had some off time because of different problems that have nothing necessarily to do with boxing business and other issues, but he's pretty solid. And anybody that watched his fight in his most recent fight, which was also a loss where he suffered his first defeat, it was a very, very close fight to Dillian White, who's been a top contender for many years. It wasn't like he embarrassed himself. A lot of people thought he won the fight. And I think that AJ wins the fight, but to suggest that it's somehow an easy route. You know, we haven't seen that Joshua in a long time. And despite the fact that Franklin lost, he's got to be confident. And I will tell you another thing. I think a lot of the folks that were involved with this fight, when they saw Jermaine Franklin show up and do his workouts, were rather shocked about the kind of condition he was in compared to when he fought against Dillian White. You know, he fought Dillian White. You know, he wasn't maybe in perfect shape, maybe a little bit of a beer belly, if you will, but a lot more cut and seemed to be in much better physical condition as he goes into the Joshua fight. So, yeah, I think Joshua wins, but I'm not going to sit here and say that this is a walkover fight. And I think that's disrespectful to what Franklin did in his last fight to say that it is.
All right. And again, we should make mention here as well that, not surprisingly, Anthony Joshua is significantly favored in this one. He's minus 1,300 on the BetUS line to get the win. The over-under is 7.5. Clarify, we always have an adventure here. It is a 12-round fight, even though Joshua lost the unified titles. It's not a 10-round fight. So that's important for the over-under of 7.5 rounds.
Yeah, it's a 12-round fight. It's the main event. It's on DAZN, and not only is on DAZN around the world, but it's the first time that Anthony will be shown on DAZN in the UK. This is the first fight of the big contract he did with DAZN that DAZN kind of was goofy about when they announced it, because they did so right before he fought the Usyk rematch, which was not on DAZN in the UK. It was a deal that the folks in Saudi Arabia that own the media rights worldwide, they sold that to Sky, which is where he had been fighting for all of his career, which put it on pay-per-view. So now he's lock, stock, and barrel on DAZN. So if you want to watch AJ fight and it's not a pay-per-view for the Brits, you know, good for them. This is the chance to do so and to see what Joshua has left. Look, it's very interesting to me because he is coming into this fight with his third trainer in three fights.
Obviously, there we go. You knew where I was going before I asked you. Go ahead.
Well, he spent his whole career with Robert McCracken. They obviously did great things together. He decided after one of the losses there that it was time to make a change. He went with Robert Garcia, who was a great trainer, probably going to be a Hall of Fame, you know, in the Hall of Fame someday as a trainer. I thought he looked a lot better in the Usyk rematch, which was the one fight he had with Robert. He didn't win, and he decided to make a change again, and he went and did the rounds of the gyms in America and worked out once again with a lot of top quality American trainers. And as he said to me in our podcast, you know, found his way to Texas and was in the gym with Derek James. And as he said, took a leap of faith. Derek obviously comes with a lot of quality background and resume and guys under his tutelage that have been doing great things, whether it's, the youngster, Frank Martin, obviously his big guys, Charlo and Merrill Spence. You know, he's a very well thought of trainer, the reigning trainer of the year. And a no-nonsense kind of guy. And Joshua trained for this fight in Texas, not in the UK. And I think that will be good for him. He got good sparring down there, supposedly. And listen, we'll see if Derek James can get him back on the winning track.
I know that our colleague David Payne, who's closer to it in England, he has said to me for a couple of years that to him, Joshua is searching for whatever searching means. And so I guess part of the concern is, especially what we saw in the ring after the Usyk loss, where he seemed that everything began to pour out of him on the big stage in front of everybody all at once. And now you make another trainer change. You wonder, how sharp is he at the beginning of this fight? Is he a mess? Is he a mess psychologically? Is he all over the place? Or did Derek James get him focused? We won't know that, obviously, until they ring the bell Saturday night one more time.
Well, that's true. But also, I mean, one thing that's important is who the other guy across the ring is. And while I have respect for what Jermaine Franklin is capable of and what he showed in the fight with White, he's not Alexander Usyk.
Of course.
When you're fighting Alexander Usyk, you're basically fighting Superman because he can do pretty much everything. Alexander Usyk, if you haven't been paying attention, and I've said this way before he was ever a heavyweight, he is a special, special fighter. He's cut from a different cloth, man. This guy has done everything as an amateur. He's done and everything you could want to see as a professional so far. He wanted to fight Tyson Fury for the heavyweight undisputed title. He gave up everything in the negotiation. They still couldn't get it done for different reasons, as we've discussed about the rematch. Jermaine Franklin is not Alexander Usyk. So I think that a lot of people who are so down on Joshua, I understand being maybe not as positive as you once were, because the losses are the losses. Okay, I get that. You know, what's the old saying? You are what your record says you are. And of course, you know, he does have the KO loss against Andy Ruiz, although he avenged that in a very dominating rematch. but I think that he's being downplayed too much because of the losses to Usyk. Anybody that would lose to Usyk would be a forgivable kind of loss. Even if Tyson Fury lost to Usyk, it's a forgivable kind of loss. So I don't make that much of those losses. I mean, to me, it's more does Joshua have his head together than his physical stuff. He's good.
That's what I mean. Yes.
He knows what he's doing in the ring. He's an Olympic medalist. He's been in massive events, two-time unified heavyweight title holder, and fought, you know, a lot of top names. So while I don't think this is like a walk in the park necessarily, given the issues he's had that we've discussed, but he's still a guy that should win a fight like this. He's not an old guy. He's barely, he's what, 30 years old now or thereabouts. His biggest problem is, well, 33, I guess, actually. But here's the biggest problem with Joshua is not what's going into this fight. It's that when he got to the level, when he beat Charles Martin as a young fighter, as a professional, his career suddenly came to a standstill in terms of the activity, because as the heavyweight, number one marquee name, plus having the title and then ultimately unifying, you're now all of a sudden, because of the demands and the magnitude of the events and the time and money it takes, you're now limited to like two fights a year. And that's not good for a young guy like that, who only had like, what, 40 amateur fights. So his problems are way more than what happened in Usyk, but I think he's adjusted to that professional lifestyle. And now it's up to him. How much does he want it again? It's much, much, much more mental with Joshua than physical, in my opinion.
There's that word searching again. We'll see what he finds in this one. We'll predict the fight a little more on our Friday live BetUS show. Joshua Franklin, Saturday afternoon, U.S. time, Saturday night, U.K. time. That is coming on Friday when we have the BetUS boxing show. Also on that show, we'll be discussing the ESPN top rank card that will be coming on Saturday night. So while I've got all the college basketball going on and we got the baseball starting up, we also got an ESPN top rank card coming from Tulsa, Oklahoma, living on Tulsa time. Intriguing fight for the vacant WBO featherweight championship. This one on ESPN Plus, actually, to clarify, Robeson Ramirez, Cuban Olympic champion, Isaac Dogbe, former world champion at 122 pounds. All right, Dan Rayfield, size this one up in the preview mode. I'm more intrigued than the Joshua return by this fight. And obviously there's a world title on the line and a former world champion involved. I get that. Joshua was a former world champ, but I'm more intrigued by this fight. Give me a couple thoughts on this one coming Saturday night as well.
I mean, I'm more intrigued by Joshua just because of the magnitude of his star power and what it can lead to. If he wins, you know, there's all kinds of doors that will open for other major fights, whether it's a Fury fight eventually or a Wilder fight or, maybe a Dillian White rematch they've talked about, which was a great matchup when they first fought pre-title. But no, I had nothing wrong with seeing Robeson Ramirez against Isaac Dogbe. Very quality fight. Emmanuel Navarrete had been the WBO's featherweight title holder. He gave up that title, went to the junior lightweight division, had that tremendous battle earlier this year with Liam Wilson, won that title and decided not to come back. So the belt becomes vacant. Dogbe and Ramirez had been scheduled to fight for the interim title. That is no longer necessary because the title is now vacant. So the winner gets the belt. And it is an intriguing matchup. Robeson Ramirez is one of the greatest amateurs of modern times. He's maybe 11-1 in the professional ranks. When he turned pro in 2019, he suffered a four-round split decision loss in a monstrous, monstrous, monstrous upset. When the Olympic double champion turns pro, you're not even supposed to go the four rounds. You're supposed to get a first-round knockout, pretty much. He fought a guy named Adon Gonzalez, and it was a shocking situation. Now, Robeson Ramirez had a very, very difficult time getting to the United States and getting here. He had to flee Cuba. He was holed up in Mexico. They were chasing him around, looking for him. He was in hiding. He didn't fight for a while. It was, forget about your boxing life or your professional career. This was about whether or not he was going to be able to like have a life, period. And finally, with a lot of help from a lot of people, it's an amazing story. He finally got to the United States. He got his, paperwork in order, and he's now here legally and started his professional career. But there was a lot of people in his ear and a lot of stuff going on with his business. The bottom line was, it was a disastrous professional debut. Got that out of the way, kind of got himself back together, won some fights, ultimately had the rematch with the guy that beat him a few fights later. He won a 6-round decision via shutout in that fight and has looked pretty good ever since. Now, there have been times where he's been just brutally boring because he just wouldn't step on the gas and was very careful. Other times he's dazzled and looks spectacular, like when he defeated Abraham Nova by knockout back in June of last year. I was at that fight. Looks absolutely spectacular. Nova was a real solid opponent for him, who was undefeated at the time and also a top amateur. You know, this is a guy that's a really talented fighter, is the point. Robeson Ramirez is the real deal. You know, forget about the fact that he has a defeat on the record. He's 29 years old. He's just coming into his own, probably, in terms of his professional abilities. He's made the adaption, I think, to the professional ranks. And Dog Bay is a tough customer. I mean, you know, you mentioned he was a champion in the 122-pound division. He then lost a couple of fights to Emmanuel Never at the title plus the rematch. He then moved up, and he's won four fights in a row as a featherweight. He's defeated, like, some solidish guys. Chris Avalos was a contender for a while. He beat Adam Lopez, who's tough as nails. He beat up on Chris Diaz in a decision, but looked pretty good. He had the tremendous battle with Joette Gonzalez that was a split decision, but he won. And he's, you know, now he's in position to become a two-time title holder. He was also, by the way, an Olympian for Ghana. He's not at the level of the accolades and the accomplishments as an amateur as Robeson Ramirez was. But this is a high-class fight between guys who are very top amateurs who have shown a lot of ability in the pros. And to me, it's, is it going to be the precision and boxing with some punching mixed in of Ramirez, or is it going to be the Dog Bay that has the who can box, but his natural instinct is to try to fight you? You know, who's going to win out? I mean, I suspect it's Robeson Ramirez because skill for skill, he's probably more versatile and can do a lot more things, but I don't count out Dog Bay just because of the toughness that the guy has also. So it's a good matchup, and I'm excited to see it. And the winner of the fight is going to be in a great position. Top Rank also promotes Luis Alberto Lopez, who has one of the featherweight titles. You know, they're heavily involved in that weight class. You know, we'll see, but it's a good main event, and I'm definitely looking forward to watching that one. I'm also happy that we have the Joshua fight in the afternoon, and it won't conflict with the main event on ESPN Plus.
And again, in this one, Robeson Ramirez is the guy you would think. He's favored to win the fight on the BetUS line, you would think. But again, Dog Bay's tough. And Dog Bay hung in there while Navarrete was beating up on him, especially in their second fight. And so I'm curious. And again, Robeson Ramirez, three knockouts in his last three fights. The one with Romero last October, his last fight went nine rounds. The other ones, though, fifth round knockout and third round knockout. Interesting, too. I just noticed this. Dog Bay is now training right here out of my area, out of Tampa. And Robeson Ramirez is also training out of a southern suburb of St. Petersburg, Gulfport, Florida. They're both hanging and training. Now, they may be training elsewhere, but they have residents in this area and have been living some here. Now, I don't know where else they might be training besides that, but that's where they're both listed, right here in my area.
I had thought that Dog Bay was actually here in the D.C. area training with Barry Hunter.
And that may be right. But it's listing what I'm seeing on BoxRec is listing him as Tampa, Florida. And I know he's been at a gym down here.
That doesn't mean
he's
training there, TJ.
Correct. But still, why would you not want to be in Tampa? I mean, you got the beach.
Well, because Barry Hunter's great gym is here in the Washington.
And you've talked about that gym.
They have a lot of talent in that gym.
And one more important point here, just because we should illuminate this. There were a lot of people that really felt like the relationship between Dog Bay and his father was not doing son much good. And so how many fights has it been, if you know, clarify, it's been at least a couple, right, where he's been away from the dad, at least two or three, where he's been with Hunter and been with different trainer. And how much of a difference will that make in this fight coming up?
To me, it's more about, it's not who's not your trainer, it's who is your trainer.
Yeah.
And I've always, my philosophy about trainers is that in some measure, they're overrated. And I don't say that as a knock on trainers who put a lot of time and effort, but it's all about, does the boxer believe in what the guy is training him to do or telling him or the words of wisdom? Certain guys, it can make a tremendous difference with certain pupils, but it's not always the case. You just need a guy you believe in. And because, you know, anybody you talk to who's been in the ring will tell you that so much of this is mental. Yes, boxing obviously is a physical sport for sure, but the mental aspect is very critical and super important. And the trainer can go a long way besides getting you in shape and putting you through the drills and all that and getting the right sparring and everything is getting your head right. I mean, and I've said this on the podcast before. I couldn't tell you the number of conversations I had over the years before he passed with Emmanuel Stewart, who was a great trainer in terms of the physical aspect and the X's and O aspect, but he always talked about the mental aspect. about getting his fighter's head right before a fight and making sure that they were in the proper frame of mind. And that's what any fighter needs, whether it's Isaac Dogbe or Robeson Ramirez or anybody else that's in the ring.
Good enough on that. I see this on the rundown. Are we seriously bringing this up? Roy Jones Jr., coming out of a five-year retirement, is fighting as a heavyweight this weekend in Milwaukee. Rayfield.
Listen,
help me here. What is going on here? I mean, I loved Roy Jones, as did you, covering him. I loved watching him. What are we doing here?
And listen, I still keep in touch with Roy.
What are we doing at 55 years old?
54.
He's going to be 55 soon. What are we doing here? What are we doing?
We're doing our job, which is we're telling the people our thoughts on this event. When Roy Jones, one of the greatest fighters of all time, period, who's in the Hall of Fame, who was the pound-for-pound king for, like, literally 10 years, who won titles in four different weight classes, who made all kinds of history numerous times in his career by going as the only the second middleweight champion to win a heavyweight title in 100-plus years. Am I saying – look, we're doing this third on the rundown. So it's not like it's the most important fight. But it is a fight that is headlining – this pay-per-view card where they're putting some MMA guys together with boxers and Jorge Masvidal, the MMA star, is his company is promoting this event. It's on pay-per-view. So I'm not endorsing it. I'm not saying it's a great event. I'm not saying that I'm super excited about it, but I think it's worth discussing the fact and not ignoring that Roy Jones, whether you're for this or against this, that this man is getting back in the ring after a five-year retirement for what he says is a one-off. He's taking on the very well-known UFC star, former UFC star, I guess, Anthony Pettis, who was a world champion in that organization, in a boxing match in Pettis's hometown of Milwaukee. It is a pay-per-view card on your normal cable or PPV.com and UFC Fight Pass and all that. And it's a six-round fight. I'm not thrilled that Roy Jones is getting back in the ring. I hate the fact that he's getting back in the ring. I wish he would retire and stay retired and go and do what he's been doing, which is, you know, do some broadcasting, which he's always been good at, or he's worked with some fighters as a trainer. You know, he doesn't need to be taking punches, but
amen.
You know, I'm not his father, and I'm not his dad. I'm not his family member. I'm not his son. I mean, he's a grown guy. He can do what he wants to do. I mean, a commission gave him a license. Again, I don't love it, but This is the reality we live in. So he's getting in the ring, and we talk and write and cover boxing, and this is a boxing event going on this weekend, and it is what it is.
I'm with you that's what we do. I'm just coming at it from the standpoint, not so much why are we talking about it? We're making mention of it, but what is his ultimate motive here? Does he miss the limelight that much?
His motive?
I don't know.
Well,
is
I
it
wrote
money?
A story about
it can't
that.
Be money. Please tell me it's not money. That we're not in need of money at 54.
No, I'm sure that's part of it. Royce had his money problems. They've been well documented. I don't know if I'm not saying he's broke or anything, but he's probably being paid, you know, decently for this fight. I don't know what his purse is. Here's the point, though. And this was I wrote a story about this situation with Roy coming back. And this is Roy's point of view. I don't necessarily agree with it, but he's going to do what he's going to do. Roy Jones was connected with the prospect of a fight with Anderson Silva, the great MMA legend, for a long, long time. Way before boxing MMA crossovers were a thing. You know, we all saw what happened in 2017 when Floyd Mayweather fought McGregor. It was the second biggest pay-per-view event in combat sports history. It did 4 million pay-per-views or some outlandish number like that, generated, you know, nine figures. It was just a crazy event. And Roy's like, I'm the guy that thought of doing that in the first place with Silva. They talked about it. You know, UFC wouldn't necessarily allow Silva to do that when he was under contract. So Roy has always wanted to have one of these kind of crossover fights. And when he was presented with Pettis, who was obviously not as famous or as well-known or as popular as a Silva, he took the opportunity to do this fight. And it is what it is. What can I tell you? It's like an itch that he has to scratch to do a crossover fight. And I hope it's an itch that he doesn't, you know, pull the scab and get infected. Let's put it like that.
Okay, with that, let's get to some news of the week, some nostalgia, and then we are done. Virgil Ortiz and Stanionis is off again. I'm not trying to be alarmist here, but this has got to be a serious concern that the blood disorder is back that sidelined him before and has him out now. Is it overreacting to say we got to be concerned for the rest of his career? At this point, for Ortiz, what are you hearing, Dan Rayfield, with this fight off again?
I mean, I'm no doctor. I don't play one on TV. I didn't stay at Holiday Inn last night. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be concerning. It's this condition called the rhabdomyolysis, called rhabdo for short. As I have written, I will read it. What it does is it is a condition that occurs when damaged muscle tissue releases proteins and electrolytes into the blood. It can damage the heart and kidneys, and in the most severe cases, cause death. Nothing to screw around with. So he had this situation that happened last year, early in the year, that caused a fight to be canceled against Michael McKinson. It was on a few days' notice, so McKinson got a late replacement and won the fight. The fight with McKinson was rescheduled for this past summer. Virgil, he recovered apparently with no problem. He had his training camp. He did the fight with McKinson. He looked good. He stopped him. He won. And you figure, okay, that was an unfortunate situation. They maybe learned their lesson about how to do certain things as far as the amount of training or overtraining, if you will, and to not do that again. And okay, so now they scheduled the Stanionis fight, which, remember, was also postponed from earlier this year because it was Stanionis that had an issue. He had to have an emergency appendectomy. So they're both 1-1 with postponements, but the appendectomy is a surgery. You take it out, it heals up, and he's fine. With this situation with Virgil, as you mentioned, you worry, is this going to be a recurring thing? Because the last thing in the world you want is, it's one thing to postpone and reschedule. Now you're going to reschedule. I am told that they're looking at a date in early July to reschedule this fight. And if it happens again, now you've really put Stanionis in a bad spot by delaying the calendar. You're now in a bad spot. You're looking at a year layoff. You know, it's nobody's fault. It's just a very difficult situation. I hope that Virgil's okay. He's a great young fighter, super exciting. You want Stanionis to be able to get back in the ring and defend his secondary belt. And I think most people, belt or no belt, the idea of Stanionis versus Ortiz, based on their styles and their youth and their potential, their upside, I think a lot of people were super excited about this fight. This was one of the better fights on the calendar of younger guys and not a pay-per-view and all that. It was just a terrific matchup. And what can I say? I wish Virgil Ortiz nothing but a healthy and speedy recovery. He's a good dude. He's an exciting fighter, and I just want to see him back in the ring and doing what he does best, knocking guys out and putting on good fights.
The conversation continues in a moment. First, let's tell you again about our friends at Ticket Smarter and the Ticket Smarter mobile app and the offer they have for Final Four weekend. One more time, if you're trying to go to those games in Houston, Texas, and you're on the secondary market, we want you to use Ticket Smarter. Why do we want you to use Ticket Smarter? Because you're going to find the most competitive prices on the secondary market through their algorithm, through their technology. You're going to get the best price available with what they have. Plus, your purchase is 100% guaranteed. Your purchase is 100% safe with Ticket Smarter and their technology. You can't say that about everybody else that's out there on the secondary market. You can with Ticket Smarter. And we've got a promo code offer. If you're going to the games for this weekend for March Madness in NRG Stadium in Houston, use our promo code HOOPS23 at Ticket Smarter and take $50 off your order of $400 or more. The get-in price right now, just for the top of the arena, is still well over $150. If you spend $400 or more, take $50 off with our promo code HOOPS23. The lower level seats are much more than that to get a pair of them. Right now for San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Miami, UConn on Saturday, plus the championship game Monday night. Again, Ticket Smarter, the Ticket Smarter mobile app. Lots of great reasons. Competitive pricing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed on your purchase. Your purchase is guaranteed. You're going to get your tickets immediately, securely, through the Ticket Smarter technology in the mobile app. And remember our promo code HOOPS23 to get $50 off your order of $400 or more. Think smarter for the Final Four. Think Ticket Smarter. Promo code HOOPS23.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's an intriguing fight on paper if we can ever get there. And again, yes. I'm not trying to overstate this, but when you hear the words potentially fatal, which this blood disorder can be, because it essentially thickens up in the arteries and can kill you. And now it is back. I still remember him talking about previously, and you do too, but I'm just refreshing everybody here, that they didn't know what he had and what was wrong. And when they finally got to the right doctor and got hospitalized, the doctors were like, it is good that you got here because this can rapidly become life-threatening stuff. And now it's back. So that's concerning for Virgil Ortiz, one of the obviously rising stars in the welterweight division. It's got the resume with all the knockouts. Let's get him healthy. But I am concerned. I'm concerned. I think everybody should be concerned on that news. Not good news. All right. Now we get better news on the monster and Stephen Fulton and a rescheduled date, because since we talked last on the podcast, it looks like it's been firmed up. Give us some more details, please.
Well, what's the old saying, TJ? The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Okay.
So they've taken away the Stanionis and Virgil fight for now, but we've gotten back the rescheduled fight between the monster and Stephen Fulton. You know, look, Inoue was moving up to junior featherweight from having vacated the undisputed title at bantamweight to challenge the unified champion Stephen Fulton for those titles. That was one of the best matchups you can make in those weight classes and maybe in the whole sport, frankly. It was supposed to take place May 7th in Japan. It got postponed because Inoue had a dislocated knuckle on his left hand, but it has been rescheduled for July 25th. So it's delayed by, you know, a couple of months, and they'll still get in the ring and do their business. And the thing that's good about that, not it's not good that it was delayed, but because it was rescheduled for July, it won't really hamper, I don't think, the winner or loser, frankly, because that is still enough time where they'll have months left in the year to get in a second fight. Look, Inoue and Fulton were probably only going to fight twice in 2023 anyway. So as long as they can get in the first fight against each other in the first half, it should still leave time in the second half for them to go on and do other things. But first things first, it's a great matchup. I'm glad that it's rescheduled. They had a press conference in Japan to make that formal announcement and back on. And so they've moved locations. Instead of taking place in Yokohama, Japan, it's now going to take place at an arena in Tokyo. But for those of us that are not going to be attending the fight in Japan or going to watch it like normal boxing fans on ESPN Plus in the very early morning hours of that date, it doesn't matter where the fight is. So no harm, no foul. We'll just, as I say, instead of having a great fight in the spring, we're going to have a great fight in the summer.
And again, as you reported, it's a dislocated knuckle on the left hand, correct, for Inoue. Whatever rest and rehab he needs, he believes he can be back on track to start training and be ready for July. Let's hope that that holds together. Nostalgia in a moment, but this actually kind of ties into the nostalgia because one of the bigger fights in the first half of the year, non-heavyweight fight for sure, is the Devin Haney-Vasily Lomachenko fight. It's now official for Vegas. Confirm all the details here because that's coming as well.
Yeah, May 20th, MGM Grand Garden Arena, the location that we always talk about where so many of the biggest fights that take place in the sport, particularly in Vegas. It will be a ESPN pay-per-view fight that you can buy digitally on ESPN Plus, but also on your normal pay-per-view providers. What I kind of like about it, I mean, look, they're going to charge $85 for the Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia pay-per-view, the Showtime pay-per-view. The other pay-per-views that we just saw, like Benavides and Plant, the typical other PBC pay-per-views, Garcia and Davis notwithstanding, they charge $75 for the pay-per-view. I think Top Rank did a smart thing here. They're charging $59.99 for this pay-per-view. I mean, all things considered in the pay-per-view world we live in, for that caliber fight, that actually seems reasonable. You have to also weigh that, though, against the fact that those other pay-per-views I mentioned, you get four fights on the broadcast. The way the Top Rank is doing this fight with they haven't announced all of these details yet, but the way it's going to be is it's going to be a 10 o'clock Eastern time start instead of the normal 9 o'clock Eastern time start, and then with Davis and Garcia, an 8 o'clock Eastern time start. But on the Lomachenko, on the Haney-Lomachenko pay-per-view, there will be three televised fights on the pay-per-view, the main event and two other fights, but they'll have other higher-level fights that'll be in the hours preceding the pay-per-view on ESPN. But the bottom line is, it's a great matchup. It's a solid price for what you get compared to some of these other events, my opinion, not kissing anybody's ass. And look, you got the OG in Lomachenko with all those super skills and all that amateur background and great career and multiple world titles and the pound for pound king at one time against Haney, one of the best young fighters, still undefeated, a tremendous boxer with good technical ability. They both wanted this fight very much. Lomachenko's entire goal since he turned pro, whoever it was going to be against, he wanted to be an undisputed champion. His best buddy is Alexander Usyk. They both had those same types of goals to become an undisputed. Usyk did it as a cruiserweight. Lomachenko's won titles in three different weight classes. He's not been able to do it. Now is his opportunity. And remember, when Devin Haney went to Australia and defended his WBC title and took away the other three belts from George Kambosos to become undisputed. Haney only got that fight because Lomachenko had bowed out of that fight because of the situation at home in Ukraine. So Haney took his place. And so now it only makes sense that with Haney having defeated Kambosos twice, becoming undisputed, that Lomachenko is next in line and they're making this fight. It's a tremendous matchup. If you're looking for Gaddy Ward, this isn't your fight. If you're looking for two of the most skilled fighters in the world, but guys who also can stand there and fight also, this is a great, great matchup. I am totally psyched for this fight.
And Lomachenko, again, has something to prove here because he lost that fight to Teofimo Lopez, it seems like an eternity ago, and has been trying to get back on the biggest stage, and for various reasons it hasn't happened, not the least of which, Dan, is we should not gloss this over. The war on Ukraine has delayed everything for he, Usyk, everybody in the country, because a horrible situation continues to go on there. And he's having to fight on without that. Yes. So
he just better not start slowly against Haney the way he did against Teofimo Lopez, or he's going to find himself in a lot of trouble.
But we do know this, and I know what you mean, but we do know this. He was injured in the Lomachenko Lopez fight. So much so that we were wondering, why is he not throwing any punches with his right hand? It's because he had a right shoulder injury that was confirmed and had to have surgery after it was over with. All right, so this is a good segue, because that fight, obviously, from Bob Arum, Top Rank Boxing with ESPN, is one of the bigger fights of the first half of the year on pay-per-view. And we got a little nostalgia involving Bob Arum and earlier this week, right? And his first big foray into being a boxing promoter.
Yes, not just his first foray for a big fight, but the first fight that Bob ever promoted in his long and illustrious career 57 years ago on Wednesday of this week. So the day before we're taping this, he promoted Muhammad Ali's heavyweight championship defense against George Shavallo, took place in Montreal, Canada at the Maple Leafs Garden. And who would have thought that 57 years later, he would not only still be promoting boxing matches for that matter, but still doing it at the highest level of the sport. I mean, whatever your opinion is, it is indisputable that Top Rank is at worst like the third promoter in boxing. I think they're still number one, you know, but there's other quality groups out there, whether you're talking about PBC folks or you talk about Matchroom Boxing. You got Frank Warren doing his thing. You got Golden Boy doing their thing. But Top Rank stands alone. They've got the best, or I shouldn't say the best. They have the most highest profile media partner with ESPN. They have a tremendous number of top-level fighters. If you take a look at the pound-for-pound list, for example, you will see it populated by any number of those fighters. They promote, you know, many of the top fighters in the sport, whether it's Tyson Fury. They have Lomachenko and Haney that we were just talking about their fight. They have Shakur Stevenson, Oscar Valdez. You can just go on down the different weight classes, and they've got a tremendous amount of talent in there. Robeson Ramirez, we were just talking about also with his fight coming up. I mean, they are just loaded. They've got the best young prospects, whether you're talking about Jared Anderson, the heavyweight, or Keyshawn Davis. This is not an accident. Bob Arum is still at age 91. I call him a force of nature. Now, he has stepped back a little bit. You know, he does have a very competent staff that does a lot of the daily activity, the daily work. But trust me, Bob, you know, keeps his eye on everything. One thing, if you go to a top-ranked fight, Bob Arum sitting there in the front row for the first fight of the night to see the young guys. I think having all these younger fighters, sort of as he's said in the past, it sort of helps keep him young at 91. But the history that he has made by what they have done at Top Rank is remarkable. So you talk about the first fight that he did was Ali and Shavallo 57 years ago. He did 27 Muhammad Ali fights overall.
Wow.
But there's not a single star, generally speaking, that you could think of in the past 50 years that Arum hasn't probably promoted at least one or two of his fights. I mean, he did early in the days of his career, he did a bunch of early Tyson fights on his old ESPN series. He did like a Klitschko fight here and there. He did a couple Bernard Hopkins fights. And those were not even guys that he regularly promoted. But I'm just saying there's guys that he didn't have. I mean, I guess he co-promoted one Tito Trinidad fight when he fought Oscar De La Hoya. But the guys, I'm looking at the list here that the Top Rank, Bruce Trampler at Top Rank has kept the list of the stats. Besides, I mentioned 27 Ali fights. Think about the names I'm about to tell you. 41 Miguel Cotto fights, 38 Michael Carbajal fights, 37 Oscar De La Hoya fights, 37 Donald Curry fights, 36 of Johnny Tapia, 35 of Floyd Mayweather, 33 of James Toney, 32 of Eric Morales. Every one of those fighters I just named is in the Hall of Fame. 31 Mickey Ward fights, 29 Mikey Garcia fights, 29 Tommy Morrison fights, 25 Freddie Roach fights, 24 Terrence Crawford fights, who will probably be in the Hall of Fame, 20 Marvin Hagler fights, Hall of Fame, 20 Manny Pacquiao fights will be in the Hall of Fame, obviously. And then a ton of other fights, maybe not at the numbers, but Sugar Ray Leonard, Alexis Arguello, Tommy Hearns, Roberto Duran, Chavez Sr.,
ridiculous,
George Foreman, Larry Holmes, Tyson Fury, Mike Tyson, on and fucking on. I had to drop an F-bomb in honor of Aaron because he loves to drop an F-bomb. The guy's done almost 1,000 shows, nearly 750 world championship fights, and the dude is still doing his thing at 91. God bless him. He's the best promoter in boxing history. I know he gets a lot of shit from a lot of people. He deserves some of the shit that he's gotten, but Bob has been a tremendous promoter for a long time. He's smart. He's tough in business. He's very generous. I've seen it. He's funny as fuck. I've heard the stories and heard the jokes. My knowing Bob for all the years I've known him, for over 20 years, has mostly been good. There's been some higher profile scrapes, but you cannot be a media member, especially in boxing, and not have a scrape with a promoter. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a scrape with a promoter, you're not doing your job. So that's fair. But generally speaking, if I had to say out of 100% of my interactions with Bob, my time spent with him either in person or on the phone covering his events, probably like 90, 95% of it has been nothing but positive. There's been a couple of terrible moments, mm-hmm, obviously. We don't have to get into that, but there's been some terrible moments. But more have been good than bad, way more. And so, you know, I like to tell people when they're still around how great they've been. And Bob has been a great promoter for a long time.
Again, I use that word. That is a ridiculous list and still going at a high level. I mean, I was just thinking this when you were going down the roll call. He's the one that convinced Tyson Fury, you know, maybe a couple of others, his father, John, whomever, come to the United States. We will market you through Top Rank and through ESPN, and it's going to flush out a mega deal with Deontay Wilder. And that's exactly what happened, because that's what Bob Arum understood 30 and 40 and 50 years ago about how to do this stuff. So
I got to say one thing about that. Bob Arum has been compared most often to Don King. They've been around about the same amount of time. They're about the same age, within a year or so of each other. They competed like cats and dogs through the 80s and 90s and even the 70s. They've had some, you know, a big rivalry outside the ring. They have grudging respect for each other after all these years. But here's the difference. Don faded away and Bob didn't. And the reason why, in my opinion, is because Bob, who, you know, went to Harvard, not the School of Hard Knocks the way King did. But the biggest thing that Bob did that Don didn't do was Bob was understood enough to adapt to the technology, to the different ways to deliver fights, whether it was going from the live gate to the movie theaters, to pay-per-view, to the internet. King never was able to do that. Another big difference, Bob Arum has surrounded himself with a group of intelligent people on his staff, younger people who embrace the changes. He doesn't micromanage them. He lets the people that he has do their jobs. Whereas with Don, he had to do every single thing on his own. And it was always, micromanage every little thing. And there's a difference in the leadership skills there. And the reason why Top Rank is so successful, it starts with Arum and what he lets his team do. And if he doesn't want them to do it, trust me, he'll tell them and tell them loudly.
Well, and one more important aspect, and this is obvious, you didn't say it, I'm going to illuminate it. Don King ruined himself because he continually ruined situations with fighters who wanted to sue him and say, where's my money? Where's my money? Over and over and over again. The list is longer than my arm, and I got long arms on that. You don't see that. You see fighter after fighter that Don King, Bob Arum in this case, made ultra wealthy, and they have nothing but good things to say about the money, how they were treated, and how they were taken. Yes, there's
There's
a rare thing like with the Terrence Crawford thing right now, but he made Terrence Crawford a ton of money too. Should be pointed out too.
30 years after he promoted him, he's still close to George Foreman. You know, decades after he promoted Marvin Hagler, I mean, granted, Marvin died a couple mm-hmm. years ago, but they stayed close for many, many years. He still has very friendly and cordial relationships with many of the past fighters that he worked with. And the thing is, again, another big difference. Don always tried to put himself first and foremost and promote himself. I'm not saying that's wrong, but Bob never made it about himself. He made it about the fight and the fighters. And I appreciate that.
And there you go. Commemorative on Bob Arum, 57 years in the business of promoting and still going. That is Tremendous. All right, so that's a good way to wrap all of this up. Brother Rayfield, have a great weekend. We'll see what Anthony Joshua does in his ring return. I'm intrigued also for this Robeson Ramirez-Isaac Dogbe battle for the featherweight title of the WBO Saturday night. I'm in and around all the college basketball in Houston, but I pledge to you, my friend, we will recap all of this on a Fight Freaks Unite recap. I will be in Houston. You will be in the Rayfield estate, the Rayfield lair. We'll get that done off the weekend and have it out on Monday. Have a good weekend. I'll also see you live as we release this podcast on the BetUS Boxing Show. I'll do that live with you from Houston and in around the basketball. We'll do that Friday, 1 Eastern time, make some gambling predictions on the fight, give some advice out. I'll see you then, and I'll be with you on the recap show off the weekend. Have a great weekend, sir.
You bet. Enjoy the games in Houston.
It should be wild for this weekend. Many thanks to all of you for finding us. Follow or subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify to the Big Fight Weekend podcast feed. Fight Freaks Unite off the weekend. We preview going into the weekend. Fight Freaks Unite recap off the weekend is coming up. For Dan Rayfield, I'm TJ Reeves. Thank you for being with us. Enjoy the fights.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.